Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, Frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Stu does America.
If there's one thing you do today, it shouldn't be to hug your kids or tell your mom that you love them. It should be go to youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica and subscribe to the channel. That's really the only thing of value that any of us can do on a day-to-day basis. Jason Buttrell is here with the latest on Greenland. We have a new potential contender on the left for the 2028 presidential election. I'll let you know who is the newest loser to watch. But we're going to start by doing a safer, healthier America. What if I, now I'm just going to, this is a thing that can occur when you're listening to a podcast or watching television. You could theoretically get some good news. I'm just saying it's possible. Now, you're not going to get that from the left right now because Donald Trump is president of the United States. So everything is terrible. And you might be a little surprised to hear they're not happy at all with this first year. They don't think it went well. Look at this. Trump embarrasses all of America in slurred, disjointed Davos speech. I mean, that doesn't sound like things are going well. Or you got this one from the New York Times. Trump's politics are not America first. They're me first. Or this one from the Daily Beast, who really isn't even trying anymore. But now is the time to admit it, America. Trump is a dangerous lunatic moron. Because their coverage up until this point didn't indicate they felt that way at all. Now's the time to admit it. Look, a lot of people don't like Donald Trump. I get it. And I get that there's an entire industry built around saying bad things about the guy and saying that whenever he's in power, things are bad. Now, Trump tried to push back against this on a speech that we covered yesterday with a bunch of accomplishments that he had. And some of them, I think, were great. Some of them, not as excited. Like, I'm not excited at all that we raised over $200 billion in tariff income. Like, I don't think that's a good thing. I think more revenue going to the federal government from taxpayers. And by the way, that is where that revenue comes from. It's paid specifically by U.S. companies that are importing products. And of course, a lot of that filters down to you. We won't go into that detail because we're trying to be positive. We're trying to be positive here. But a lot of the things he, you know, talks about, like the trade deficit, I don't care if the trade deficit is lower. I don't think that really makes much of a difference. We've talked about why 1,000 times. I won't bore you with it. There are some things, though, that you absolutely must understand are going well. Really important things. Things that are much more important than a lot of the stuff that we talk about on a day-to-day basis. And I would say at least some of these you probably don't know about. Some of these are right in the Trump administration. Some of them began before and have continued through the Trump administration. I want you to know that there are good things happening in the world. So let's try to approach things that way. How about this? From The Atlantic, by the way, not a conservative publication. The great crime decline is happening all across the country. Let me give you some charts. It's a chartapalooza day here on Stu Does America. Conservanerds, unite. These are property crimes, a chart about property crimes, and you'll see while we did have an elevated, an increase in property crimes through the sort of COVID period, when everyone was peacefully burning down buildings all over the country, we have seen a massive drop off since through the very last year of Biden's administration and into the Trump administration, a big drop off. Same for robberies. Robberies have been declining for a very long time, back from Trump's first term in office, leveled out during Biden's term, but have dropped again since Trump has come into office. Reported violent crimes. Again, we saw a little bit of a lump. we'll call it. We'll call it the Biden lump. There was a lump during the COVID, post-COVID, George Floyd, everybody's woke, don't put anybody in prison, period there. But we've seen a massive drop-off over the past year or two. In August, the FBI released its final data for 2024, which showed that America's violent crime rate fell to its lowest level since 1969, led by a nearly 15% decrease in homicide, the steepest annual drop ever recorded. Preliminary 2025 numbers look even better. The crime analyst Jeff Asher has a good follow on Twitter, by the way, if you like crime stats, has concluded that the national murder rate through October 2025 fell by almost 20%, and all other major crimes declined as well. The post-pandemic crime wave has receded, and then some. And they mentioned the homicide numbers in there. I want to give you more perspective on this, because it's easy to say, okay, well, we had the COVID increase and, you know, people were going crazy for a while and everyone was saying we shouldn't have any police anywhere. So, yeah, the murder rates went up and now they've fallen back off, and that's great. And that is true. But I want to show you a little more perspective than that. Here is the recent time. This goes back to 2018. And what you see on the homicide or the murder rate is starting off about 9,000. It drops to about 8,000 in 2020. Then COVID hits and it goes up to 12,000. And we've seen a pretty steady decline starting in about 2023 down to the number in 2025, which is more like 7,000. So the lowest number in that time period. But it's not just the lowest number in that time period. Allow me to zoom out with you to one of the most amazing charts you might ever see. This one I think might shock you a little bit. Here we go. This is murder rates since 1900. And what you see on this particular chart, the murder rate since 1900, is that we are currently in today's world at the lowest murder rate since 1900. That is an incredible thing to internalize. What a miracle. What an amazing achievement for a country that kind of beats up on itself quite a bit. And if you give me that chart one more time, what you see there is a rate that starts around a 6 per 100,000 in 1900, rises till kind of the end of the Great Depression, gets up to about 10, falls pretty dramatically through the 50s as we go through the wartime and all of that unrest. We go through the 50s, of course, the 60s, it starts to rise again, very high through the 70s, high through the 80s, high through the beginning of the 90s or so. We saw a drop off. We've talked about that drop off many times from the 90s. And then we saw that drop off reverse. And there was a real conversation as we went into COVID and that aftermath of the George Floyd period. Have we overturned this incredible achievement we had had from since the 90s and, you know, starting to take crime seriously? A bill that, by the way, the crime bill, one that Joe Biden actually supported back in the day, then turned against when he was actually president. So that screwed us. But that's besides the point. The bottom line is we are now at the lowest murder rate since 1900. That's great. That's great news. And it is, by the way, improving under President Trump, not reversing. Murders fell by 21% last year in 35 large U.S. cities, the biggest one-year drop ever, and likely the lowest rate since 1900. 11 of the 13 tracked crimes were lower in 2025 than in 2024, according to data compiled by the Council on Criminal Justice. 9 offenses declined by 10% or more. Aggravated assaults fell by 9%. Gun assaults and robbery tumbled by 22 and 23%, respectively. I thought we had so many guns that everyone was getting shot all the time. Drug crimes are up 7%, but we need that to calm the social media voices in our head. So I think that's actually probably okay. Not a positive, though. We have more on the drug situation as well, because we do hear this. The drug crimes were up. That's likely an emphasis on enforcement. However, what's actually happening behind the scenes of those numbers? There's actually some real positives there as well. Drug overdose deaths in the United States fell by more than 20% last year, according to the latest data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention amid Donald Trump's crackdown on the country's porous borders. You see the chart here again, rising from really before Donald Trump even entered the race the first time. It was rising and rising and rising. When we're talking about overdoses, that finally wound up kind of turning around through like mid 2024 and continue to drop through 2025. so far a real, really big positive. And you wonder, well, okay, 2024, you know, Joe Biden's still president. And we don't know. It's hard to say every single reason everything lines up to this, but it is an interesting picture when you look at it in this particular way. You see the rise of fentanyl deaths, for example, going up from really the very end of Trump, really through the beginning of when COVID kicks in. Fentanyl really started taking off. It stayed up at those high levels throughout the Biden presidency and then started dropping down toward the end of that presidency to the much lower levels that it is today. Someone on the internet, I can't remember who this was, put this little box, though, to kind of give you a couple of ideas as to what policies changed in this period. Biden opening the border in 2021, you see the rise. And actually, I would say it's a little bit later than this box actually is. So you kind of had that rise really through COVID. But the border was much more open as Biden was president. If you remember, though, when Biden started thinking, crap, I got to run for re-election and this border is really a problem, he did implement some of the Trump era restrictions again toward the end of his presidency in 2024. That is, it at least coincides pretty closely to the drop in fentanyl deaths, which would make sense. And then, of course, the increased enforcement on the border and everything else Trump has brought to the picture has made it drop even lower. So real positives. There. These are real world positives, too. This isn't like, oh, gosh, well, you know, there's some little, you know, thing that makes us feel good for a couple of days. These are people living that were otherwise dying. So a really good thing. How about heart disease? Yes, we eat whatever we want in this country. Yes, I will almost definitely go to Taco Bell after I leave this broadcast. That's separate from this. Heart disease fatalities drop. They're still the leading cause of death in the U.S. Something has to lead. However, annual heart disease deaths decreased by 2.7% between 2022 and 2023, 941,000 to 915,000. That's, you know, 30, you know, almost 30,000. That's a big deal, according to the report. However, cardiovascular disease still killed more people in the U.S. than cancer and accidents combined. That's not a change. Death rates to blockages in the coronary arteries, which are blood vessels that wrap around the heart surface, decreased by 5.9% from 371,000 to 349,000 over the same period. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, you can maybe people are just getting healthier. There's the GLP-1, the Ozempic, Mounjaro sort of. The world, which does seem to help a lot with that particular problem as well, but that is improving as well. Now, let me give you one that I had absolutely no idea was going on. And this one goes back a little bit farther. This one goes back a little bit farther, but let me present this to you because I was shocked by this. Cystic fibrosis patients are living much longer in 2022 than in 2008. And the data, of course, is not particularly updated to the last couple of years. So this is all predating Trump. This isn't a partisan thing. This is just really, really good news. And this comes from evil Big Pharma, which, again, we can have problems with evil Big Pharma at times. They have done things we don't like that much, but we should also recognize they've done a lot of really good things. Let me give you one that we should highlight right here. The median age of death for patients with and without cystic fibrosis. Now, for a long time, and people live about 75 years old, the increase in the lifespan for people with cystic fibrosis has risen from 26 years old as a lifespan to 66 years old. It's almost now that people who have cystic fibrosis have no decrease really at all as opposed to the average person. That has happened largely because of a couple of drugs that have come around since 2008 and really since 2012. Almost all of this, if go back to the last one, sorry, since 2012. The 2012 situation, you see the rise almost exclusively since 2012. This is basically a little over a decade, and people with cystic fibrosis were living to their mid-20s and now are living to their mid-60s. 40 years of lifespan in just a little over a decade because of a couple new drugs that came out in that period. Now, this other chart shows something that we should all be rooting for, and at times we lose sight of. The difference in the percentage of people who die at different times, different age groups. The people dying of cystic fibrosis are now living to 80 and 70 years old and 60 years old, as opposed to 20, 30, and 40 years old. If you look at the left side of the chart, what you want in a chart like this, and I'll, of course, explain this to my fabulous podcast listeners who have an incredible ability to visualize charts because of the intense training they've been put through on this program. I apologize for all of this. We really should have like a some sort of like, sometimes I read audiobooks and they have like the addendum PDF with all the charts in it that you have to refer to. We really should do that for this podcast because, we really require a lot out of you. And I apologize for that. But anyway, what you want out of a chart like this is you want it to be thin on the left and growing wider on the right, each color. So you want the top ones to be, which are the higher age groups, to be thinner on the left and growing wider on the right. And you want the opposite to be happening with the younger age groups. You don't want them to be wider on the left and thinner on the right. The bottom line is all of that's happening here in this chart with cystic fibrosis, all positives. Like people, a very small proportion of people made it to 80 years old back in the day, maybe 6 or 7%. Now that number is more like 15 to 16%. Only about 10% of people made it to their 70s. Now it's more like 20%. Those numbers increasing over time gives you a longer lifespan and a better chance to make it through something that's horrible for a lot of people. The median age at death for patients diagnosed with cystic fibrosis has more than doubled from 26 to 66. From the years 2008 to 2022 to compare it to patients without cystic fibrosis. So these are people who don't have it. They only have a 12% lower life expectancy now. That's an incredible improvement from 65% lower in 2008. That's a miracle. In 2022, more than 60% of patients diagnosed with cystic fibrosis were 60 years old when they died again. No one wants them to die at all, but this is a real positive, really positive things. And, you know, when I say the word miracle, I don't just throw that out there. This is what I think when it comes to miracles. Sure, you know, sometimes God just kind of flies down. I think he's got like a, you know, like a, maybe like a hang glider, and he comes down and he's like, he turns water into wine. Yes, okay, we think of that as miracles. But I think the real miracles, at least the more common miracles that we don't appreciate as much, are people who are inspired to somehow develop through things that, you know, humans have been able to come up with over the years, inspired to create incredible achievements and innovations that lead to changes like this. These are miracles that people don't think of as miracles, but they really are, and we're going in the right direction. And finally, one more that, you know, hits so many. I have a relative right now suffering with cancer and praying for her on a day-to-day basis, like going through a real tough time right now. So your prayers would be welcome for my aunt. But I will say this, more people are living 5 years after cancer diagnosis than that new data shows. For the first time ever, 7 in 10 people, or 70%, now live 5 years after their cancer diagnosis, according to the new annual report. In addition, survival rates have improved dramatically over the past decades for people diagnosed with some of the more fatal cancers, including myeloma and liver or lung cancers, the new data shows. And this is going to echo the last chart that I was talking about, the one where I specifically declined it. You want it to be small on the left and bigger on the right, which was a fascinating television segment and podcast segment, I'm sure. But this is another situation. And this one, I think, will explain a lot by how we actually understand the world around us. Because oftentimes, I think we all kind of feel like, gosh, I feel like I hear more about cancer now. I feel like I hear it all the time. What do you mean these rates are going down? I hear it all the time. It's terrible. People are dying more and more of cancer. And so let me show you this chart that explains exactly what is happening right now. The red line on this chart, which goes straight up, basically, is the number of people who are dying of cancer. And it is increasing by a lot. It's going straight up. I mean, it's almost doubled since 1980. That's a huge increase. Now, when you look at the actual cancer death rates, which takes into account population growth, is that second line there. It's a gray line that goes up just a little bit. It's up, but it's up by just under 20%. And you say, oh, gosh, well, why is this a positive then? Cancer deaths are up. Cancer death rates are up. It's because of that third line, which is massively important to actually understand an issue like this. This is the adjusted for age cancer rate chart. And that line, the line there that goes down by about 25%, is the cancer death rate adjusted for age. What's happening is people are living longer with cancer. People are living long enough, and this sounds weird. It's a good thing, though. They're living long enough to develop cancer. And I know that sounds weird, but they're not dying from other things that used to kill them earlier. And so you can live into your 60s and 70s, and maybe cancer develops there. It's never a positive when it does happen. People aren't necessarily excited about reading like that. If you're in a hospital right now, you're like, well, that doesn't make me feel any better. But as a society, that is actually a really positive outcome. You think of somebody, and this sucks, but you think of somebody like Joe Biden, who has cancer, right? I mean, Joe, I don't know how old he is. He's got to be 100 by now. I don't know. It felt like he was 100 the entire time he was in office. But there's a real good chance that someone like Joe Biden may have passed away from something completely different a long time ago. He's battled a lot of stuff over his life. He was able to survive all that. And now he's in his 80s and he does have cancer. Hopefully he survives a very, very long time. And that's not what ends his life. But if it is, it's one of those things where he's already in his 80s. He's lived through several other scares from several other things over his life. And he's made it for, you know, a life expectancy that is, above what the average might be. I will say, sadly, though, he has not cured it yet. We just checked the website. Now, this isn't completely updated. I would say we pulled this a couple hours ago. But as of right now, Joe Biden has not cured cancer. And we know that's true because we went to hasjoebidencuredcancer.com. I did think about taking it down at one point. He's no longer in office anymore. And he actually has cancer. But it was a campaign promise. And I feel like this is an easy way for us to check in to see if he's been able to knock it out yet. Now, I will say again, I did pull that little screenshot a couple of hours ago. So it's possible he's cured it in the last 2 hours. If not, that's not great news. But you can always go check yourself, hasjoebidencuredcancer.com.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
I want to bring in Jason Buttrell. He's head writer and researcher for Glenn Beck and host of the Insider Feed as part of The Torch over at glennbeck.com, which is still free for like another week, right?
Yep.
So go over there, check it out. There's not only what Jason's doing on a day-to-day basis during the radio show, but also documentaries, exclusive podcasts, all sorts of cool stuff going on at The Torch. And it's free to check out for the next week, so don't miss your opportunity to do that. I think all you have to do is an email, right? Give me an email.
Super simple. Just put your email address in, no credit card, anything like that. Just create a password and you're in.
Nice. Do it. You can do that now at glennbeck.com. Okay, I want to talk to you a little bit about Greenland because I don't know. I find myself in a weird position on the Greenland thing, which is, like, I do see its strategic value. It would be great. I don't necessarily love the way that we went about all of this, frankly. But I will say, I really don't understand what's happening. And I start from this premise, which is, I don't necessarily listen to everything that Donald Trump says, because a lot of times what Donald Trump is saying is not directed at me. It's not directed at you. It's directed to some official in some other country. He's saying it to the world, but he means it so that they react to it. And then later on, his plan may have been the entire time to like make this big claim and kind of pull it back afterward. The art of the deal, if you will. Let's start there. What was that? What he was doing? Was there ever a plan to try to take over Greenland?
No, I never believed that for a second. Although, I mean, going back to the 1800s, that's been a thing that a lot of U.S. presidents have tried to do, mm-hmm. has tried to purchase Greenland. I think the president knows that even the way he went about it, Denmark was going to dig their heels in on this because they would just end up looking stupid. They said, okay, fine, take it, you know.
Right, you can't.
What's it worth? What, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't think that was ever, and plus, like, the random European nation sending troops over there is like we're going to send one guy that's in logistics, you know, as a show of force.
Yeah.
Not too big of a show of force there. It's all been posturing. And I think that that's what it was for. I think you're exactly right on the art of the deal thing. I think that's entirely what that was. Personally, what I think was that, and we know the Trump doctrine at this point, you basically, you know, you take an issue and you take it up to like times a thousand. And then that's what you do. I mean, you do this when you're trying to sell your house a lot of times, you know, or a car, you know, like you'd be like, well, I'm willing to accept $10,000 for this piece of crap truck, which is exactly what I would sell my piece of crap truck for, hopefully, or that's at least that's what I would list it for.
Yeah.
But I know I'm only going to get $5,000 for it.
Right.
But I know there's also going to be people who are going to lowball the hell out of it. So what I want to do is I've got option B the entire time, which is $5,000. And that is what I believe is what this framework was. I think it was option B, which was the entire time, probably option A, what they thought they were going to get. And that appears to be what we're getting.
And it's hard to tell what we're getting, honestly. I mean, obviously Trump hasn't released any of the details of this framework. You know, looking through the reporting on this, you know, it wasn't even Denmark that agreed to the framework. It's NATO. And the people in the Danish like parliament are like, they don't get to negotiate this stuff for us. Like, who is this guy? He doesn't get to talk. So they're fighting back against it. No one from Denmark has actually said they have agreed to a framework. It's just NATO saying it, which is a little weird. And even what they're talking about, it's hard to really even know because we had these rights through a treaty in the 50s. To be able to go over to these places with, like, you know, basically them saying, sure, that's okay. We had tons of bases there. We gave them all up in the 90s for God knows what reason. And now, like, couldn't we have just gone to them and said, hey, we've got this treaty already. We're going to send troops over to these bases. We're going to reopen them. We're going to, you know, put the Golden Dome in those locations. I mean, did we need to go through all this hassle to get to this point?
So I think what's really important to look at this is the realities of the 1950s and the geopolitical, mandatory objectives, which collectively in the West we all agreed to. Those no longer exist.
Yeah.
So as much as they love to scream and cry about Russia, I don't think if you really talk to them, much of them are too worried about being invaded by Russia. Even though they scream that that is their main, defensive posture. Russia's can't even get through Ukraine. They're definitely not getting through Poland. I don't think they'd even get over the border in Poland. So, and all of them know this. But what happened in places like, you know, the Diego Garcia thing earlier, that kind of shows that the geopolitical perspectives have changed. Interests have changed. The UK is not really too concerned about that anymore, mostly because they know that we're going to take the lead anyway. But I think that was a huge signal to the Trump administration that even though maybe Denmark and the rest of NATO agree with us on, you know, why it's important that we, have the responsibility for most of the security when it turns to Greenland, that won't always be the case. So the way the 1950s agreement works there is that has to be re-upped every once in a while. There's no guarantee that one day they could say, nah, we don't want you guys here anymore. And that's a very, very dangerous reality for the Americans, for us. I think that if in this proposed framework, you're right, we don't know too much. We know that it was an agreement or at least a discussion between NATO, the NATO head, Mark, whatever his name is, and President Trump. But then Denmark, I would assume, is somewhat involved because I'm sure that they were like, okay, I'm sure the NATO guy went to them and said, what would you be willing to do? We have to have the Americans on this. Without America, there is no NATO. We have to have them. So what would you be willing? So I assume that it's like these back channel discussions, but nothing. And again, a lot of this framework could be more posturing. It could be more of this is another one of the extremes of what we'd like. I don't know, but it still signals to where Donald Trump is going. So right now it says in this framework, if any of this is true, is that we will have bases, potentially multiple bases, and we will, that like the area around our bases will be sovereign. So we'll never have to negotiate these treaties again. We will just be there indefinitely. That's what they want. Now, will they end up, it might not eventually get there, but you can tell where the Trump administration is going. They don't want to negotiate this in the future because we don't know if our interests will align in the future, but they don't want to deal with these, let me re-up this agreement, let's re-up this agreement. Hey, but we really need this base over here and there's no guarantee you'll let us there for the Golden Dome, all this stuff. They want assurances and they don't want to have to negotiate this in the future. that's where it's going. So even if they, even if the sovereignty thing or we own certain land, if that goes away, mm-hmm. I have a feeling that we're eventually where they'll get to, that $5,000 price tag on my truck could end up being, this is an indefinite agreement. Okay, fine. Say we don't own it. Whatever you want to say, but we will never negotiate with you on this ever in the future. It's just ours.
Yeah. What was the reasoning for us giving it up in the 90s? Like, we're like, oh, communism fell. I guess we don't need this anymore. Like, we didn't think that there could possibly be a threat. It just seems like insane that we would let all these, you know, mothball all these bases that we had access to.
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of it could have been, I mean, you look at the way NATO and European countries have treated national security just on their own. Mm. Let's look at Greenland as the example. So Greenland, they pledged, I think during Trump's first term, they pledged after Trump prodded them and told them to do this, you have to take security of Greenland more seriously. So they said, okay, fine. So they pledged like $224 million on surveillance and some other hardening things, and it was better. It's not what it's needed, but it was better. Well, they slow walked that because they had no intention of putting all that $224 million. They slow walked it to, I think, 1% is the only thing they actually allocated. That pissed Trump off royally because they clearly don't care. And that's what NATO does. And a good portion of that, what they pledged, went to their social programs. That's what Europe is more concerned with. They love the fact that we spend around $1 trillion in collective defense that NATO can draw from and backs them up. They will say we pledge a certain percentage of our GDPs to defense, but they never do it. They prefer instead to redirect that cash to progressive social welfare type stuff. And every single time, that's what happens. But I assume that's probably what happened in the 90s as well. As a lot of these were being rolled back, they were like, great, now we can just throw this into free healthcare or free whatever. We can throw it into that because we don't have to worry about it because Big Daddy America will take care of us. That's got to stop.
I keep coming back to this thinking to myself, like, maybe my answer, I'm just saying this personally, for this entire thing was just to not pay attention to it at all and just wait to see how it turns out.
Yeah.
I just feel like the one thing that's like really frustrating about this entire era is we're always on a roller coaster of back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And like, people get pissed off and they say, well, Trump doesn't know what he's doing. He's the taco. He's always chickening out. That's not what's going on here. The plan is pretty, it's not that shocking when you think about it. He's doing the same stuff he was doing back in the 80s with real estate. You have to watch that, but like, you shouldn't be emotionally involved in every one of these switches. Let those other countries do that. I feel like we should just be like stepping back and saying, all right, look, he's going to do his thing. Let's see where this lands. We don't need to listen to every tweet. We don't need to listen to every truth. We don't need to listen to every single statement he makes. Let's just look at where this goes out and we can judge it by its results. I feel like that would be a sane way for our society to approach things. What do you think?
Totally sane. Yeah, okay. For sure. I think that, do we have a lot of time here?
Yeah, okay, I got a couple minutes. Yeah.
So I think a good way, something that I think a good way to look at this is President Trump looks at a lot of these like business deals and how business deals have been conducted either with him or, you know, other, you know, businesses in the past, corporations. And I actually, back when I was doing my executive protection gig, I ended up in the middle of, with a client of mine, gosh, I have to be so careful with how to describe this, when there was a hostile takeover that was initiated against a big a company.
Okay.
And I remember asking one of the business guys there, I was like, is this legit? Do you think this is gonna happen? And that business person said, the hostile takeover is not the goal, you know, the end state. That is the huge thing to the shareholders to scare everyone because what they really want is this to happen. And I, right when I saw this happen, when everyone was like saying, oh my gosh, he's gonna invade Greenland and everything they're saying, I was like, this is the hostile takeover. This is in business, this is the hostile takeover threat when the backroom deals are what's going on that no one will ever hear about. That is the original intent of what they want. But they're going to threaten hostile takeover and that will catch all the media attention to push the shareholders into like a corner of like demanding action either one way. But meanwhile, this is going to happen. So I think anytime you see a lot of the stuff that President Trump is talking about, the collective freakout, it's all directed. And the media plays right along with it. And the Trump administration knows the media is going to take it in the most extreme. I just saw another article this morning that I highlighted for you guys on the radio show, but I forgot to send it. But it was from The Guardian, and it said, yes, the Trump administration has a serious Nazi problem. And I swore, I was like, is this from 2016? It's got to be. No, it's another one. So the Nazi thing is back again. Again.
Yes.
They know that's where they're going to go every single time.
Well, I love that. And we don't have time to get into ICE right now, but I love whatever everything I see online is the picture of this one guy who has a short haircut. And they're like, Nazis! his hair is shaved on the side, Nazis! He's wearing a long jacket, Nazis! It's like, okay, I don't know anything about this guy, but like, that's your argument? And they start taking the photos of him and like turning it into like aged black and white so it looks like he's actually a Nazi. And I'm like, I don't know, the guy, I have no idea. Like, I have no idea. I don't know anything about the guy, but it's hilarious that every single thing, this is their answer. And then in addition to that, they agree with so many of the Nazi policies. You know, the free health care, the control of your everyday life, the disliking Jews an awful lot. All of this seems to come from the left.
Yeah.
And yet they're always blaming everyone else for being Nazis. It's a fascinating world, Jason. People can get on board with the torch. Just go to glennbeck.com, just an email address. And while you're there, you get not only all the documentaries, all the stuff that there's a big, I know there's a big couple of podcast series that are up there right now. One's on history. There's a fiction one. And then you also get you.
Yeah.
I mean, what more could you want? You, during the radio show.
Right.
Commenting on what's going on a day-to-day basis.
You also get some George AI and Glenn AI podcasts that we're throwing together every single day. Those are crazy. And speaking of China, we did a huge one on unrestricted warfare with China. Mm. That's a four-part series. That went live yesterday. You got to read that with all the new stuff coming out with China now. It's insane.
All right. Tons of stuff. GlennBeck.com. Check it out. Jason Buttrell, head writer, researcher for Glenn Beck and host of the Insider Feed on The Torch. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Well, a potential new challenger in 2028. Mark Kelly says he's considering a presidential run in 2028. If you remember, he was one of the finalists for the VP slot under Kamala Harris, who you may remember lost. Why did she lose? Well, she's a terrible candidate. Donald Trump probably was going to win no matter who they ran. But also she chose Tim Walz, which was a horrible choice. I was actually really convinced early on it was going to be Mark Kelly. That was my first kind of conviction on the VP race, mainly because he kind of checked a lot of the boxes. And you know, I think Shapiro would have been a more obvious choice, but he has that whole problem that he's not so aligned with Hamas. So maybe Mark Kelly kind of, you know, he's an astronaut. I then watched him in a couple of debates and was really unimpressed by him. So I kind of changed my mind on that one. So that is what wound up happening was, of course, the worst possible pick, which you'd expect, actually, from Kamala Harris. Why wouldn't I have analyzed that properly at the beginning? Who's the worst person it could be? Oh, Tim Walz, that's who she's going to pick. That should have been the end of my analysis. But I did. I don't think Kelly's the type of guy who can win. But I would not be surprised to see him in the race. We also have this from National Review, Democrats' radical left-wing vision for Virginia. This is an interesting path where Abigail Spanberger ran as a moderate. We see this over and over again. Democrats run as a moderate, and then the second they get into office, they abandon all that stuff. And they do it intentionally, immediately, because by the time the next election comes, they want you to forget that they basically lied to you about being moderate. So they have to jump right into it. Some of the things highlighted, she rescinded Governor Youngkin's Executive Order 47, which required heightened cooperation with federal immigration authorities. Immediate moves to reconstitute the boards of Virginia's state-run universities like George Mason and University of Virginia. Pushed a constitutional amendment that will create a fundamental right to abortion that would pave the way for abortions in the third trimester. Creation of a government-run child care program, effort to cap emissions for carbon, raise taxes, expand gun control, and reinstitute DEI. That's your appetizer.
So I hope you like that. Gavin Newsom was denied entry into the USA House at Davos. This is very difficult for Gavin Newsom, who is really just trying to present himself as the guy. Like, Mark Kelly might be running, whatever, but he's the guy. He's the default because he's always in these situations, and it feels like he's kind of already the president. Remember, he had a debate against Ron DeSantis back in the day. Here he is. Here is Scott Bessent, by the way, addressing the situation with Gavin Newsom in Davos.
I think it's very, very ironic that, you know, Governor Newsom, who strikes me as Patrick Bateman meets Sparkle Beach Ken, may be the only Californian who knows less about economics than Kamala Harris. He's here this week with his billionaire sugar daddy, Alex Soros, and the Davos is a perfect place for a man who, when everyone else was on lockdown, when he was having people arrested for going to church, he was having $1,000 a night meals at the French Laundry. And I'm sure the California people won't forget that. And I can tell my message to Governor Newsom is the Trump administration is coming to California. We are going to crack down on waste, fraud, and abuse. And I was told he was asked to give a speech on his signature policies, but he's not speaking. Because what have his economic policies brought? Outward migration from California, a gigantic budget deficit, the largest homeless population in America, and the poor folks in the Palisades who had their homes burned down. He is here hobnobbing with the global elite while his California citizens are still homeless. Shame on him. He is too smug, too self-absorbed, and too economically illiterate to know anything.
Thank you very
much. Eventually goes, let me know if you need a clarification on any of that. By the way, Patrick Bateman, American Psycho, that's exactly who Gavin Newsom is. And it's we've been saying this for years. This is one of our Photoshops. In fact, this Photoshop has been around long enough. It predates AI. That probably would have made it look better. But there it is, the Photoshop of Gavin Newsom as Patrick Bateman, who is essentially exactly who he is. Well, down here in the South, we're in Texas, we are bracing for a snowmageddon. I have to take home. They're like, you need to take home some equipment so you can broadcast from home. I'm like, well, I'm not on until Monday because I'm off tomorrow. And they're like, well, yeah, but it's going to snow. So it's like, what? You're going to wipe us out for a week, I think. That's what's going on this weekend. They think it's going to, I don't think it's going to be that much snow, but what happens, it's like rain, then it's going to freeze, then it's going to snow on top of it, then it's going to freeze again. It's going to be a disaster, and we can't handle it, okay? We're going to be inside for a long time, okay? Just get used to it. If you're home and you're in the middle of this, maybe you can go online and bet on the Oscars. We now have the nominations, including Sinners, makes history, setting an Oscar nomination record. Now, there are more categories now, so I don't know if, you know, that makes all that much difference, but it is a big achievement. 16 nominations for Sinners. I guess the hashtag OscarsSoWhite no longer really applying anymore to the Oscars. I think we've cleared that now. Of course, if it loses one of those 16, God forbid, we'll all have a big racial controversy for ourselves after the ceremony. And finally, we have another thing you can bet on. J.D. Vance's chances of naming his baby. What is it? What's the name going to be? The number one choice is Charlie, which they're kind of saying, oh, well, Charlie Kirk, who was a friend of J.D. Vance. You could see that coming. Then you've got Donald or Don at 2,200. Now, I would be pretty surprised if he names that after. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be. Then you have Lincoln, Christian, and Peter. Again, this is like, oh, Peter, he's friends with Peter Thiel. Okay, well, that doesn't necessarily, you know, that doesn't mean he's going to name the kid Peter Thiel. I don't know. But maybe. Do we know it is a boy yet? Is that known? Yeah, it is a baby boy, it looks like. So I was going to say, be interesting if it was just a girl, and then he'd have to change the gender. That's all he has to do. Remember, it's only a series of magic words you need to change gender. So it would have been a very, very easy process. No surgery needed. Just say it, and it is true. You know, as you get murdered, there's not a lot
that comes that's good out of that whole process. So let's do an okay, here's what happened about murderers. Now, when you're being executed by the state, the only good thing about that process is the final meal, right? You get to pick whatever you want. Well, an Ohio restaurant is now serving serial killers' last meals, and they're opening up a new location as well. The concept here is it's America's first true crime restaurant. It's called The Last Meal, and it provides the actual last meal that real serial killers and other murderers asked for. John Wayne Gacy, you get chicken wings, strawberries, fried shrimp, and French fries. If you pick the Ted Bundy, you get Parmesan steak loaded with steak fries. Eileen Wuornos, the female murderer, a cup of black coffee and a cheeseburger. Some of these aren't so great. I will say the Victor Figure, I don't even know who that guy is, but he got apparently a single olive. And they charge $3 for that, by the way, a little overpriced. So you can go and now get the murder meals of all of these people. I don't know if that's something that, I mean, it seems like it'd be kind of a fun thing to go, and then you'd be like, hey, I'm eating the same thing that a mass murderer ate. Lucky me. All right, hope we make it through the Snowmageddon and we're not murdered ourselves. We'll see you next week.